Well, good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. About a week or so ago, Doris Haddock, known to the world as Granny D, died at the age of 100. Now, I don't know much about her previous life, up until the age of 90, when she walked 3,200 miles across the United States to draw attention to the need for campaign finance reform. And she has subsequently been on the world stage, or at least certainly the national stage, and she has written many articles, and she's run for public office a number of times just in the last decade of her life. So I'm quite sure that she was pretty active locally, wherever, the first 90 years or 89 years. And she, when she died, had 16 great-grandchildren and perhaps even some great-great-grandchildren that I don't really know about. At any rate, I'd like to read in her honor a couple of articles that I printed in my newspaper, the North Coast Times Eagle, over a couple of years. And the first, actually, that I'd like to read is from a speech that she gave in Hood River, Oregon, here in this state, on August 16th, 2003. A Small Group of Dedicated People Might Actually Do Something, by Doris Haddock, aka Granny D. And remember that it was made in 2003, so there might be references to the previous administration. You've heard that wonderful Margaret Mead quote about how you should never doubt that a small group of dedicated people can change the world, and that indeed it is the only thing that ever has. I think it's time we stopped repeating that quotation and came to some agreement about what we happy few might do over the next 5 years or so. There are two kinds of politics in the world, the politics of love and the politics of fear. Love is about cooperation, sharing, and inclusion. It is about the elevation of each individual to a life neither suppressed nor exploited, but instead nourished to rise to its full potential. A life for its own sake, and so that we may all benefit by the gift of that life. Fear and the politics of fear is about narrow ideologies that separate us, militarize us, imprison us, exploit us, control us, overcharge us, demean us, bury us alive in debt and anxiety, and then bury us dead in cancers and wars. The politics of love and the politics of fear are now pitted against each other in a naked struggle that will define not only the 21st century, but centuries to come. This struggle is real. A very close friend of mine, a college student, spent this summer in Guatemala to help small communities prosper in ways that support their local environments. Those villagers and their environments are under siege by international big business, using a captured U.S. government to push through damaging treaties, such as the proposed Central America Free Trade Agreement and the hemisphere-wide Free Trade Area of the Americas. The villagers of Guatemala want global fair trade, but the corporations and their captive governments want free trade. If fair trade wins, a global middle class will arise, as farmers and craftsmen are paid fairly for their work, and as they gain a voice in their governance and their environments are protected for their future generations. If free trade wins, it is colonial exploitation, torture, and murder written in blood across another century. Or do you wonder if it is really an honest difference of opinion as to which policies are best for the people? On July 24th, again this is 2003, when Granny D, by the way, was 93, three armed gunmen broke into the home where my young friend was staying in Guatemala, dragging her and another young woman to the ground, covering their heads with blankets. These young women began to count their lives in seconds. For three quarters of an hour, the gunmen went through the biodiversity files in the home. Big business interests in Guatemala, in league with elements of the military, were trying to push through the passage of free trade agreements, and to do that, they must suppress all dissent. Their partner and blood brother is the U.S. government. Not the U.S. government that we see, but the U.S. government that much of the rest of the world sees, a world of CIA treachery, the training of death squad leaders in our own army facilities within the United States, and a big business-friendly White House that winks and nods as great injustices continue. The two women survived, but tens of thousands have not because they are in the way of big business. It is not an honest difference of opinion. It is a global struggle of people versus a global crime syndicate that counts taken over governments and multinational corporations as its members. There is a term now in common use in Latin America that is confusing to us Americans. It is called neoliberalism, and it is a very dirty word indeed among the brave pro-democracy and fair trade groups throughout the Americas. Neoliberal sounds like the happy return of the Kennedys, but it is not. Nor is it about some resurgence of the liberal values of the Square Deal, or the New Deal, or the War on Poverty, or any of those great moments when we called upon our best instincts to cooperatively address our largest needs as a free and self-governing people. The liberation that we meant when we used the word liberal was the liberation from poverty, despair, and ignorance, the liberation of the mind through public education, the liberation of the citizen through universal voting, equal rights and equal opportunity, and the freedom to prosper from the fruits of our labors. But that is not the liberal that is meant by neoliberal. It means newly free to rampage. It means free of government constraint. It means free trade over fair trade. Neoliberalism refers to the liberation of a giant beast that we, the ordinary people of America, the farmers, the townsmen and townswomen, the trade unionists, tied down to the earth early in the 20th century, and it is that beast that has now got loose again to do great damage to us all. The deadly meanderings of this beast are most apparent in the most labor-intensive regions of the world. But the beast is here, too, and he has brought misery and suffering to your life and mine, stealing our water, blowing up our mountains, fouling our air and seas, and stealing our lives and our future at every turn. Neoliberalism is the colonialism department of neoconservatism. How did we handle this evil giant before? The Teddy Roosevelt progressives and the William Jennings Bryan populists before him were part of a successful effort to tie down the giant. After the Civil War, at the high point of the Industrial Age, the age of railroads, oil, and steel, great corporations and trusts were created that towered over the human-scaled businesses of America's main streets and cast dark shadows over human liberty and happiness. These monstrosities treated humans as slaves. They robbed the public wealth and were properly called the robber barons of the Gilded Age. These giants freely stalked, destroying the economics of family farms and family businesses, corrupting our government with great bribes and corrupt deals, and polluting our food, our land, water, and air. They tore our families apart and dragged us into the hardest of hard times, as they have been liberated to do once more. I am not talking about all corporations or all big business. Corporations of reasonable size are but groups of people. Beyond some point, however, the humanity falls away from an organization, and all that is left is the will to power and profit. These bloating corporations care not that our seas and atmosphere are rapidly changing in ways that may lead to disaster and famine of unimaginable scale. They care not because they are not human and they have moved beyond human values. They do not need the fresh air or the water or the mountains or the birds. They are a kind of virus or a cancer, all prettied up with a nice logo and television commercials to tell us the most outrageous lies, one after another. For in reality, they crush us under their boots and they pay off our political leaders with campaign contributions and other bribes. They trample on diversity of all kinds, including human personality, as fewer and fewer kinds of people can prosper in the world they are casting, and more of us are marginalized. the big corporate empires would be powerless if they were not in league with crooked politicians. I do not mean the politicians necessarily know what they are doing. The corruption is so immense they cannot even see it, even when it pays their spouse and finances their reelection. These, the happily blind, populate Capitol Hill and our state capitals like vermin who have been for generations in deep caves where they gradually lose their vision and other senses. 2.25 centuries was a good run for this democracy, but a rebirth is long overdue, and it is indeed necessary if we are to save our freedoms and human values here and abroad, and if we are to protect the beauty and sustaining graces of nature, including the positive sides of human nature. What that Republican Teddy Roosevelt understood at the beginning of the 20th century was that if the rights and fortunes of the human scale are to be protected, if the rights and fortunes of average Americans, small businesses, family farms, and Main Street are to be protected from the ravages of overscaled business giants, then government must grow in size and power to protect us all. The big business wing of the Republican Party, under William Howard Taft, defeated the family business wing of the Republican Party and their leader, Teddy Roosevelt. It would take another Roosevelt, Teddy's cousin Franklin, and another party to turn the Square Deal into the New Deal, under which government greatly expanded to protect the people. That has not been altogether a happy strategy, as large government has its own costs to us and its own abuses. The libertarians are our new and brave allies in defending the Bill of Rights from George Bush's anti-American attacks through his henchmen, Attorney General Ashcroft and Homeland Security Czar Ridge. But our friends the libertarians would have us do away with most all of our government. Anyone who has paid too many taxes or dealt with too many rude and overly powerful bureaucrats understands the libertarians' feelings. But I ask at least the intellectually honest libertarians, and there are many of them, to wisely see that government, which is indeed a system of restraint, must be matched in strength and scale to the corporate monstrosities that now have the ability and the willingness to destroy us, to blow up the entire Appalachian range for the profits of coal, for example, as is now happening, or to steal for profit the water supply of whole regions, or to enslave whole regions at low wages rather than allow fair trade, or to move every one of our good jobs overseas. These inhuman and inhumane organizations are stealing our lives and all nature around us. Only government is large enough and powerful enough to rein in the corporations whose cold-heartedness trades lives for profits all over the world. Teddy Roosevelt began the buildup of big government to protect us from overlarge corporations so that they might not overwhelm us human beings. In doing so, he created a split in the Republican Party, and big business interests won. Perhaps the rational solution is to scale them both back, corporations and government, and let individual enterprise and individual freedom, its many middle-class treasures and blessings, blossom in the old battlefield. But there is no leadership for that, and governments are being stripped of all regulatory powers by the false religion of a new deity, the unfettered, liberated market. So, no longer protected by governments, we must fight the battle that is before us, human versus monstrous corporations and their body-snatched government puppets. It is a battle of human scale versus monstrous scale, love versus fear. What is happening now, of course, is that the neos in the Bush administration, you can call them neoliberals or neoconservatives, though they are neo-nothing except perhaps colonial and lithic, are starving government very much on purpose, and they tell us as much in their writing. Huge military commitments, huge tax cuts to the wealthiest individuals and corporations, and huge budget deficits leave no money for the old New Deal programs like Social Security or newer programs such as Medicare. No money for schools, hospitals, police, fire, veterans. No money for anything but the front lines of a corporatized military and militarized corporatocracy. A starved government, once our government, has no ability to restrain the liberated giant or to investigate its abuses or prosecute its crimes. And so, 2 years after Enron, but one person is behind bars. It is not for lack of villains, and, as all California cries, it is not lack for victims. When did this monster get untied? During the era of corporate raiding, permitted and smiled upon by the Reagan administration. Ronald Reagan admired those cowboy businessmen of the 1980s, the corporate raiders who engineered hostile corporate takeovers. But those takeovers, allowed by hamstrung regulators, caused all large and mid-sized American corporations to go on a rampage of streamlining, outsourcing, wage cutting, plant closings, and job exporting. They did so to make themselves takeover-proof. It was no longer respectable to make a respectable profit and to serve your community with good jobs and fairly priced goods and services. The new mentality of profit maximization and unlimited mergers and no government control was the untying of the monster, and it was no accident. The ropes were further loosened in the greedy and morally corrupt Clinton and Bush administrations, until we find ourselves now with a government of, by, and for the corporations. The new model CEO was the ruthless cost cutter and deal maker. CEO salaries went unbelievably high, where they have stayed. For every $100 the average American worker makes, these top CEOs make $50,000. It is a moral outrage in the land of so many homeless and struggling and worried people. A century ago, the ordinary people of America joined together to tie down the giant. The antitrust laws and environmental laws and the rights of workers to organize and collectively bargain for wages and benefits all joined to nurture the restoration of a great middle class, always the bedrock of democracy. The robber barons, the great giants, remained tied down, no longer free, liberated, to do as they pleased in crushing us with their great wealth and political power. And so it was for a time. And now, loosed again, these giants have taken over our television networks and most of our newspapers, turning them against our interests and against the truth itself. These giants send our young people off to fight their commercial wars, great profitable ventures. How free are we now? Check your bills in your bank account. How much time and leisure do you have to enjoy your life and friends? How is your place in your community as a free and equal citizen? Or are we drones that go to work, go to bed, to rest for more work, go to the stores to spend all that we earn and more, and watch television to receive our instructions what to buy the next day, if we have jobs at all? Is that freedom by some other name? It is not freedom by any name, and it is nothing to push on the rest of the world in the name of freedom. These corporations steal our time with their computerized telephone switchboards and their long waiting lines and few employees. They steal our jobs and our benefits and our pensions. They use fear at every turn to sell us a little protection and a little more. And they steal our senators and congressmen just when they might have earned their keep protecting our democracy. What shall we do about these corporate giants stalking our earth freely? How shall we get our children home from their wars and ourselves free from their captives? We the people, acting together in the new ways made possible by electronic communication, must become the large counterbalance to these powers, the counterbalance that our government no longer provides. By communicating and acting in concert, we can reward the good companies and thereby keep our money clear of the worst. We can make our demands for fair trade products and provide the shift in market share that will change the practices of those businesses that now exploit our brothers and sisters here and around the world. We can agree together which television news channels is the least objectionable and agree to watch only that, for our watching and buying habits are votes for the kind of world we will live in. By nudging market shares, our small group of dedicated people can influence great changes. We have the tools now to do this now. It will not be an easy task, but we have no real alternative if we are to save the world, and that is what we must decide to do. Tell your favorite coffee house that, as of Earth Day, you will only buy fair trade coffee. Let's give a fair warning for fair trade in this and other areas of products and services. Let us develop the best information about who is doing what, and let us use our new tools of electronic democracy to come to consensus regarding which companies deserve our support, a reverse boycott on a global scale. I will try to put information on my website about who is helping this new effort, and I will put some printable cards there you can print to give a fair warning for fair trade to your favorite shops and other companies. And let us use each subsequent Earth Day to push for more improvement on every front, giving our fair warnings to move progress along. Let Americans and other people of the Earth join us or not, but let them decide and know for themselves which side they are on. Yes, let's continue our efforts to reform our government, most especially with campaign finance reform. But with revolutionary new tools, we are capable of redefining democracy at a critical moment. Let us not be shy about it, for time is short. We stand for love and fairness in the world. That is not gentle work, nor is it painless or bloodless, as so many people around the world know. This is, after all, our world and our lives. Do you remember those few weeks after the 9/11 attacks when we, as an automatic antidote to the inhumanity of those attacks, sought to reassert our humanity in a million little ways? For that moment, we came out of the hypnosis we have come to live under, and we saw the Eden of human love and cooperation. We must not fall back under that hypnosis again, as it is a waste of our life. The forces of life and death are in struggle, for those are the other names for love and fear. Let us choose life and love, and happily use ourselves up in loving service to one another. And that was Granny D. Aka Doris Haddock, making a speech in Hood River, Oregon on August 16th, 2003, when she was 93. And I'd like to read one other from her, which was reprinted in my newspaper from Orion. Horatio Alger on Crack by Doris Haddock, known as Granny D. I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending to liberty than those attending too small a degree of it. And that's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. People who have an educated view of what is happening in the world understand that U.S. policy is not serving justice or peace, and they understand that the world's environment is now gravely endangered by official U.S. policy. It is frustrating for these people to sense that, after several decades of dumbed-down education and constant media misinformation, they are now a minority in America, or at least that is the way elections are turning out. Most people, in fact, want the environment protected, and they want the United States to be an agent of justice and peace in the world. Turning that real majority into a political majority will be difficult, but the prospect should be encouraging to those who care. One strategy that ought to be considered is appealing to the American right. The present assault on the Bill of Rights by the military-industrial complex ought to and can create a common cause between the more thoughtful members of the right and the left. Those on the right who feel that their powers have been undermined, the power to raise their families according to traditional moral values, for instance, need to understand that the only way to protect a family now is to preserve personal freedom, save the human scale of the economy, and save the very environment. What we are seeing now from the far right is not conservatism at all. It is fascism, the imposition of a national and worldwide police state to enforce a narrow worldview that enriches and empowers the few at the expense of the many and gives no respect or honor to other cultures, ways of living, or opinions. To call that conservatism is a crime against the memory of America's great and true conservatives, who might think that government ought to be less involved in daily life than we old liberals do, but who nevertheless stood for the core American values that today's leaders undermine at every opportunity. We are living in the harsh world invented by a handful of corporate raiders whose values are completely foreign to the fairness and moderation that had so long served as the proper foundation of American success and the American dream. This new world devolved as if from a virus, and the new business hero, a Horatio Alger on crack, did very well. A Darwinian system of corporate survival assured the most carnivorous, rather than the most responsible, have risen to lead our most powerful commercial organizations. These super wealthy predators, through their political patronage, control both political parties. They control Congress and the White House. If we Americans are split into two meaningful camps today, it is not right versus left. The two camps are these, the politically awake and the hypnotized. Hypnotized by television and other mass media that dangle packaged candidates and oft-told lies. People who are suckered into forking over their own best political interests. It is all done to politically prolong the open season on anyone, conservative or liberal, who places morals over profit as the billionaire corporate takeover artists bag their catch for the day. And in their bags are our freedoms, our health care, our futures, our old age security, our family time, our village life, our small businesses on Main Street, the middle class itself, and our position of honor in the world. Political success is often a matter of empowering people. The instincts of the American right are not evil. They are all for moral living and family strength, and they are good fighters. We have different views of the role of government, but we can arm wrestle over that in good humor after we have together saved the world from the forces of greed and corruption that are our common enemy today. And that was written by Granny D in 2003 also, and she wrote it for Orion. And I have read these articles in honor of her. She died, last week or so, at age 100. And I think I'd like to read something by another deceased person, a real old friend of mine, the Reverend Billy Lloyd Holtz, who shares the same page in my newspaper with Granny D's article that I just wrote, "I Want My Country Back." And he starts with a quote, "I'm tired of fundamentalist preachers. I want my country back." Howard Dean. "I too want my country back. I want my Constitution back. I'm tired of watching my civil rights being destroyed in the name of homeland security. I want Congress to take back the right to declare war that it unconstitutionally granted to the executive branch. I want the Supreme Court to uphold the Constitution it is sworn to defend and define by making every vote count on every election. I want my vote back. I don't want some computer program that I can't access to tell me who won and who lost an election. I want my land, my water, and my air back. I'm sick of seeing it sold to the highest bidder. I want the media back as a voice of the people, not just a parrot for the corporations that want us to be consumers, not citizens. I want Edward R. Murrow back and I.F. Stone and Walter Cronkite. I want the Fourth Estate to do its job in a democracy, to inform the electorate. I want our troops back home. I want our military to serve with honor and to defend democracy, not attack other countries because we fear what they might do or because they have something we want, like oil. I want our children to stop killing children in other countries. I want my flag back. I'm tired of seeing it used as a weapon and a symbol that separates our people rather than uniting them. I want my pride in my country back. I want to be able to hold my head high when I say I'm an American. I want the respect of the rest of the world back. I want my country to once again be a beacon of hope and example to the rest of the world of what freedom and democracy can be, a model for the future, a leader in human rights, a demonstration of what tolerance and patience can accomplish. And I want my money back. I want taxes to be paid equally by all Americans. I want government contracts to be bid on, not granted to cronies. I want corporations to pay their share and not be allowed to use offshore mailboxes to cheat the American people out of the services they need and pay for. I want the churches to return to the business of making peace rather than making money and making laws. I want my time back. I don't want to have to take the time to march in the streets to let my government know how much I disagree with how it is running the people's business. I want my country back." And that was the Reverend Billy Holtz.